The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
How are you? Feeling good? Thank you so much for coming. It's so good to see all of you.
Thank you guys so much for being here. Welcome to In Conversation with Sarah Cooper. Well, congratulations are in order. This is a hilarious book, and thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for letting me write it.
I got to start by saying that I love that this is called Foolish, and I can tell that that's a word that you love. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I had this whole concept of, you know, the fact that I was making fun of this fool in the White House, and I was playing the fool, and but also that, you know, 100 tricks to appear smart in meetings. A lot of times I lived this life of being smart all the time, and it was a burden, and I don't want to be smart anymore, you know. I want to be a fool. I want to do foolish things. I want to live my life, you know.
So, I love it, and foolish is one of my favorite words.
I mean, you will see it everywhere from now on, because anytime I read anything now, it's like fool, foolish, foolish. I mean, I think it's a moment. It's going to be a moment. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. It's along the lines with like silly.
Silly, and also just like not taking yourself too seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as an immigrant coming here, I just tried to fit in so much. I tried to do everything perfectly and be perfect and say the right thing all the time. And that worked really well in corporate world, you know.
I bet.
It, you know, you get into a meeting and that you nod and you take notes and you draw a Venn diagram, and you look really smart. Once I got into sort of the entertainment world, being on a set, you have to take chances. You have to look like an ass in order to be even remotely interesting.
Yeah.
Looking smart, being robotic, playing by a script, nobody wants to see that. Perfection is boring. Perfection is death.
Absolutely.
That's not a joke.
Well
Stop
said.
Laughing.
Well said. Let's be a little foolish tonight. You know what that means.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. I love so many parts of this book, and it feels like you're talking to us, you know?
Yeah.
And not in a way where it's like, everybody sit down and shut up, because I have so many things to say. It's very much like, isn't this crazy that I'm talking to you? You know, it's light and fluffy.
Yeah, I wanted it to be light. I mean, that was the kind of the thing with 2020 was, and I hear this a lot, is like, it was a hard time to laugh for a lot of people. And people come up to me and they say, you know, it was a time when I didn't think I could laugh at anything. And this was the most serious thing that was happening. And it was really, really hard to have any levity whatsoever. That's kind of what I wanted to do with the book. Take a lot of serious topics, things that I wanted to talk about that, you know, maybe other people would sort of cringe at, and things I've even cringed at, and sort of find the humor in them. You know, I talk about, you know, miscarriage and things like that, which is like a very serious topic. But, you know, when you're told you're going to have a miscarriage when you're trying to get an abortion, that's hysterical. You know, that's really funny.
I love it. And also, I love that we get to peek inside of Sarah Cooper's diary when she was a child.
Yeah.
And one thing that's so interesting to me is that it almost doesn't sound like a diary of a child. It sounds like a little adult studying children.
I know. It does. Can I tell you that I auditioned? Have you all ever heard of Mortified? It's where people read their childhood diaries. I auditioned for that. And they rejected me because they said I didn't sound like a child.
Yes.
Because I was talking about my brother going off to Iraq and, you know, all of these like serious things. And I was observing people at the Poison concert, like everybody has their hands like this and they're doing this.
Yeah.
And you know, the Ricky Rocket's drum set says "fuck Iraq," and and Bush made a really good speech. I think it was really good. I was a little Republican. I was just really I was headed down a bad path. I really was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I think I just I spent a lot of time inside my room by myself. You know, I was really really close to my sister Rachel when we were growing up. We were a year and a half apart. And my mom made all our clothes and dressed us exactly the same. And everywhere we went, people were like, "Oh, you're twins." And then we would say, "Yeah, we're twins," because we got more attention that way. And so we'd be like, "Yeah, we're twins." And then at a certain point, we found out that Rachel had a learning disability. And so she was, you know, put into a different school. And then all of a sudden, I found myself like, oh, I want to have these deep conversations. I want to talk about these observations I'm making. And I didn't know where to go with that. And so I went to my journal with them. But I also think that Rachel and I learned to communicate in other ways, which helped me later, which is that I think I made faces at her. I think that's kind of how I sort of learned to use my face to sort of communicate with her. And she loves being silly. She has no trouble being silly and being foolish and having fun. And as I got older, especially in my 20s, I found it really hard to relate to her because I wanted to be so smart. And I was working in tech now and I was doing all this. And now being 45, I'm like, oh my God, like I love connecting with her and trying to relate to her more because I realize now she like has it figured out, you know, she has it figured out. Don't take anything too seriously. And yeah, so I think I've been talking too much.
Oh no, you're fine. It's literally your job while you're here. Lots of people came and they want to hear more words from you.
Words, more words.
Do you think that making your, because you made a lot of your siblings laugh, but definitely making Rachel laugh was like your first acting?
I think it was, and I think because Rachel laughed so easily, like she to this day, you know, she will laugh and tears will be coming down her face, and she'll be like, "Rachel, you have to breathe," you know. She just laughs so much, and it gave me this high a little bit to make her laugh. It made me feel really, really good, and yeah, I mean, I think that that's sort of where that came from. And my father was such an authoritarian in my household. It was almost like if we could make him laugh, we were okay.
Oh, you know, like then you got something really good.
Yeah. Well, no, we just got dinner that wasn't, you know, awkward or tense. So, you know, and then I heard dads love my videos. And then I was like, oh, dads love everything that I do for some reason. And it's because I was making fun of my dad to make him laugh. Mm-hmm. So that's where some of that humor comes from. So I feel like it's those two things sort of together. Yeah.
And you come from Jamaican parents.
Yeah.
Who
well,
came...
I'm Jamaican too.
You're Jamaican too. That's true. She's Jamaican, everybody. don't call her anything else.
I was just talking to my doorman the other day who's Jamaican. Every time I tell him I'm Jamaican, he's like, "Yeah, but you weren't born there." And I'm like, "Yes, I was. I was born there. I came here when I was 3." And he's like, "Oh, okay. I guess that's Jamaican."
Everybody, island girl right
Mia
here.
Mia island girl, man. Cha. Yeah.
But I bring it up to say that to try to be an artist, especially a comedic artist, when you have immigrant parents, is a mountain.
Yeah,
it's something that you have to climb.
Yeah,
because immigrant parents come to America and they're like, "I need you to read every book to justify this trip so that you can eventually take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And I will have somebody to speak highly of when I check in with the neighbors."
Yes, yes.
So I can't imagine that it was easy to watch TV with them and see yourself on TV and see yourself in certain characters and not be able to express it until you got older.
Yeah, I mean, I remember we would watch TV and my dad would never sit and like watch it with us. He thought we were wasting time, like if we weren't being productive. I remember this one time, me and my sisters were eating ice cream. I think I was probably like 6 or something. And we were making faces in the ice cream. And then I was like making voices with like the faces that we were making. And my dad was just eat your ice cream, you know, just eat it. There's no playing, you know, playing is bad. It was all about being productive. And he always wanted us to be productive.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, like they wanted us to have a 401k. Like, that was the goal. Have a 401k, you know, have real estate. That was the goal. So to be like, no, I just want to, like, I want to be on stage and I want to play Juliet, you know, that didn't seem like a good goal to have for them. And my dad really, really pissed me off once. Like, I did a bunch of theater in high school and then gave it up. And then, you know, my life is kind of like a tennis game. It's just like back and forth and back and forth between entertainment and tech and entertainment and tech. And at age 30, I quit my job. I was like, I want to be an actress. I got to try this one more time. And I did this play, a Neil Simon play, and my dad came to see it. And he said, I think you are better in high school. And I was like, you didn't support me then either, Dad. Like, so at some point you realize, like, you know, they have their own idea of success. Yeah. And you have to find what it is for you, because their idea of it isn't going to make you happy. My literary agent, Susan, was just asking me, hi, she's like, are they going to read the book? No, they're not going to read the book. They're not going to read the book.
I think that's probably true, but yeah, they will still be proud of you from, you know, the reviews.
The pride comes from the success. Once they saw that I was successful, then they were like, oh, there might be something here. Yeah. Maybe you did a good thing, you know? So it's like, you know, when I hear about, like, you know, other actors or people, like, if you have kids, please be supportive of their dreams. I guess that's the point.
Yes.
Just be supportive of them, because a lot of times, you know, I sometimes feel a little, like when I did the play, The Wanderers, at Roundabout Theater Company, my dressing room I shared with Lucy Frayer, who went to Juilliard, 4 years at Juilliard, Australian, and on opening night, her side of the room was covered in flowers, just covered. My side of the room had like one bouquet from WME, like just like that was it. And I, you know, it was like things like that where it's just like, you know, like that support is really, really great. And so not having the support just means that you have to lean on yourself a whole lot more. And I'm not saying that my parents aren't supportive. They are really, really supportive. Love them to death, especially if they're listening, which they're not. So it's fine. But support your kids' dreams.
Yeah.
And your grandkids' dreams.
And you.
And your cousin's dreams.
You heard her. You guys better be leaving here to go support somebody else. Would you say that it was hard to grow up being Jamaican and having a name like Sarah Cooper?
Yeah, it was. It really was.
You wish you had a name like
Marjorie.
I don't know. I didn't know what you were going to say.
I don't know. Yeah, Sarah. Yeah, like my, I write about in the book about how, well, I didn't really have a name when I was first born. They didn't know what to call me. They thought I was going to be a boy, so they were going to name me David. And then I came out and I was a girl, and they were like, we don't know what to name her. We don't have any other name for her.
Let's go home.
So back to the drawing board, I guess. And then a, you know, family friend picked me up and instinctively called me Sarah, and I think at that moment, the ghost of a basic bitch named Sarah moved into my body and just gentrified my whole personality, you know? And so then that's, you know, from that moment on, like, my mom would cook jerk chicken and I couldn't eat it because it was too spicy for me. You know, I couldn't eat it.
Yeah.
The Sarah has followed me around. It's been great in that, like, you see Sarah Cooper and you don't think of this, you know? Well, maybe you do now, but it's also been like, yeah, just very, you know, I could be a character on the OC, you know, like, I just,
And it's easier for kids to make fun of you if you have like a two syllable name. It's just easier to be like Sarah.
Yeah. Well, easy. I mean, I got Sarah Cooper Pooper Scooper. That's what I got.
Now, kids,
that's what did it for you guys. That's what made you go, oh, okay.
Some kids aren't good writers, and there's only so much.
That's what they're awing about, the bad writing. It's cliche, Mark.
I think that, especially in America, even if you have immigrant parents or if you don't and you come from just Black Americans, society and the media teaches us a lot about what type of Black is cool, what type of Black is acceptable. And it doesn't leave space for various types of black, right. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that in becoming an artist, we often have to be the first of our kind.
Yeah, yeah.
And did you feel that way when you were little too? Did you feel like, oh, I don't really fit in with some of these black kids. I don't fit in with some of these white kids. Maybe I'm my own thing.
Yeah. I mean, my parents, we moved around a lot because my parents are very good at investing, very good at real estate, very good at, so we the first house we had when we moved here was a rental. Then we moved to another rental. Then we bought a house. Then we bought a bigger house. Then we kept moving. And the neighborhoods just got whiter and whiter and whiter and until I was the only black kid in AP history. And I would always get the question, what are you? What are you? That's the question I would get. And I wouldn't even know what to say. I'd be like, and then I'd ask my parents, like, what am I? And they'd say, well, you're Jamaican, you know? So I was like, okay, I'm not black. I don't know what that, I don't think I'm, am I black? Am I Jamaican? What does that mean?
Yeah.
And then I talk about this in the book about how I was walking home from the bus stop with my best friend, Stacy, who was Jewish. She still is. And, she told me that one of the older kids called her an N-word lover. And I said, why would they call you that? And she said, because my best friend is black. And I said, I thought I was your best friend. And she said, you are. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? And she's like, you're black. And I went home to my parents and I was like, I think we're black. And they were like, no, we're Jamaican. And I was like, I think you're black too. I think our whole family's black. I think I opened this completely wide open. Like I've done it.
Solved the case.
I've solved the case. And we were talking backstage about 23andMe, you know, like my ex-husband wanted to do that because I think he's really white. He's like white. He's like really white.
He was trying to find something else.
He was trying to find some spice in there. And he was trying to like, I think I'm, and then it was just like, it came back white. Like it literally was like, that's all it said.
Yeah. They just sent him a blank paper.
It was just a white sheet of paper. Yeah. And it's just, you know, I'm just mixed with a lot of different things, but yeah.
Also being well-read and how we speak as a certain black person, like there's certain things that they don't slip off our tongue as easily as a kid from Harlem, you know? And I know you say in the book that you don't really say the N-word. I didn't start saying the N-word until I was in college, you know? It took a while until I got my credit up, you know?
Really?
Yeah. It took a while, yeah.
See, I think that's the interesting thing is like sometimes people say you can say the N-word if you're black. That gives you a pass.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true.
I actually think it's a vibe.
It is a vibe.
It's like you have to have the right vibe in order to say it. And when I say it, people are like, that's not the right vibe. Like they are like, please don't ever say that ever again. And I did it in the audiobook. I do.
Oh, you do?
I say it.
I got to hear it.
It's not great because I was on the train like earlier this year, and these five black and brown teenagers, boys, came on and sat all around me, and they were just throwing the N-word around back and forth. And I took my mask down very calmly, and I was like, can you guys teach me how to say the N-word? And
very bold of you to speak to teens on New York City subway and ask for lessons on language.
I did. And they were like, they got very excited.
They were like, we've been waiting for this all day.
All day. They
Is
were like,
your name Sarah? Is your name Sarah? Get in here, Sarah. You're cool now.
Yeah. They were like, say it. You can say it. So I tried to say it. They're like, you can't say it.
They were like, we were wrong. Yeah. And now we've taken part in something we hate.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is really hard. And it has to be the vibe. And you have to work hard. I think, honestly, it's just from a lot for me was just standing up to people. You get to a certain point where you're like, I'm just out here.
And just out here.
Yeah. And I can say
can
it
willy nilly. Can you say dead ass?
Dead ass.
See?
Dead ass.
Yeah.
I gave her the psh, so you can use that next time if you want to jump into something. Psh, just say psh first, stunt. And everybody will be right on board.
What about stunting?
Okay. Unfortunately, this is being live streamed right now. So next time you want to try a word, let's clear it with me first.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, this is my hood. No, I love this book so much. And I think you're so vulnerable in it. And you talk about your relationships and dating. It is so hard to be a female powerhouse in any industry.
Oh my God, thank you. Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
But it's even harder to then find a partner that can handle what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so you had relationships at so many different periods of your success.
Are you calling me old?
No. I'm not. These were recently. You just did this. I can't imagine that it was easy to be married to someone when you're watching yourself become a star.
Yeah.
It was, and they are sitting next to you and also having a reaction to it.
Yeah.
That isn't the same.
Yeah. It's I talked about this in an interview earlier a few weeks ago about how I was at the weakest point in my life when all of that was happening in 2020. And I don't think I explained it, but I want to like try to. It's basically like I was in a marriage with someone who wasn't right for me at all. I sort of outsourced all my decisions on everything with it to him, you know? And that's, you know, there's a chapter called The Immigrant to Basic Bitch Pipeline. And I didn't know what I was wearing. I didn't have any sense of style. I didn't have any sense of like who I was. And so then I had all of this attention on me. And you know this, when you get to this like stage where people are looking at you, they want to know who you are. Like in entertainment, they don't have specific meetings. They have general meetings, right? And I was like, what the hell is a general meeting? Because in tech, there's an agenda and there's action items. Absolutely. And you know what I mean? Someone emails you afterward, you know, like there's things that happen. But in entertainment, it's just like, tell us about yourself. And I was like, I don't know who I am. I literally don't. I knew that I wanted to be in comedy. I knew I loved entertaining. I knew I loved performing and all of that. But I didn't know like who, I didn't know like really what's my vibe? Like, mm-hmm. who am I really? And so a lot of the things that I was doing, I was like excited to do them. I was grateful to do them. But I would get in these meetings and I would just kind of say what I thought they wanted to hear, mm-hmm. which is not what they want to hear.
No, they want to hear your wildest dreams.
They want to hear the wildest, craziest. Yeah. They want to hear foolish things.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? That's what they want to hear. And I couldn't give that to them because I was terrified of saying the wrong thing, of doing the wrong thing, of pissing off the wrong person, you know? Yeah. So that's what I meant. Like, it's the weakest moment in my life because I was buried behind all of this people-pleasy bullshit. You know, I was just sort of buried behind all of that. And it took asking for a divorce and to get out of all of that.
I also think it's interesting that you always say you worked up the courage to ask for a divorce. Like it's a question.
Yeah.
They're going to give you the divorce. They don't get a choice.
No.
We're getting divorced.
Yeah.
I wish I had been there in your life to say, stop asking. We're getting divorced.
I asked for so many things, like even the apartment, like, you know what I mean? Like it's, you know, I wanted to move back into our place and I asked and I told my sister that. She's like, why did you ask? You should have just done it. And I was like, no, I was a permission whore, I guess. You know, I just wanted permission. Someone tell me it's okay that I do this, you know?
And that was really interesting too, because you divorced this guy, you guys move out of this apartment and then you decide, I actually want to stay in that apartment. I actually love the apartment. The apartment wasn't the problem.
Yeah, the apartment.
It was the guy and the linen that he wouldn't allow to go in the linen closet.
Yes.
And we got to get him out of here.
Yeah.
And that's really bold of you. Even if you did ask, it was very bold of you to do it.
Thank you.
But also, that apartment was where you filmed a lot of these lip sync videos, right?
No.
No. So you were in a Brooklyn apartment.
We were in a windowless Brooklyn apartment. Okay. In 2020, and that's where I was filming those videos.
Yeah.
And my mom, who's, you know, she's Jamaican, she loves the sun, so I was like, I don't think Jeff's happy. You know, I kept saying, I don't know if he's happy. I think he's, you know, midlife crisis or something. And she's like, well, is he getting enough sun?
Wow.
You know, that's...
She
that's what our marriage needs.
She diagnosed it.
Yeah, she...
Is he taking vitamin D?
Yes,
he's getting vitamin D. We gotta get it.
So I was like, okay, maybe we'll move into an apartment with some windows. Mm. So in 2021, I was like, this is the last ditch effort to save this marriage. We'll move into this apartment with some windows.
We're going
to
get him a tan. This is going to work somehow.
Yes.
We're going to
color that white piece of paper in with something.
Right. We will connect over moisturizer.
Yeah. So we're in this apartment, this beautiful apartment with these windows. and he has the lights on. And I'm like, we don't need the lights on with the sun coming in. So I turn the light switch off, and he gets mad at me for turning the light switch off.
Yeah.
And for the first time in the 8 years that I'd been with him, I was like, what the fuck? Like, just be happy. Like, turn the light off. It's fine. And that was like the light switch moment of just like, you know, this isn't working. That was like the first thing of this isn't working.
Even if I was arguing with a man and the sound of the light switch was going off and on, I would start to consider what's going on in my life, you know? Maybe we do need to rethink this.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I really don't care about the light switch. I just want to be happy. You know, that's what I said. And then we, for the first time, started talking about the divorce. And it's just so ironic that I was filming the pilot for How to Be Successful Without Hurting Men's Feelings when I looked back at my journals and realized, oh, my God, I need to get out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you think back about filming those lip sync videos, you know, you had to do a few things before you actually sent it out to the world, you know?
Yeah.
You put on a little makeup or you put on a blazer and then you switched your hair, put on a little bang for this one. You know, those steps, every step took a second of bravery, you know?
Hmm.
A second of foolishness to decide, I just had this thought and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Do you think you were actively making those decisions, or do you think you were kind of in this zone where you were blinded by what could be a funny idea?
Yeah, I think I was. I mean, I don't want to call Trump inspirational in any way, but because it was so hard to get every little like sniff and every little like and he didn't talk like a normal person.
No,
you know what
no,
I mean?
No.
Like, he has weird like pauses and things like that. I had to do them over and over again. And then every time I did them, that repetition, I would think of something new. And it was like this little playground of like, oh, maybe I'll actually use, you know, my dog's toy for this lobster video. You know, maybe I'll do this, you know, blind mask thing, you know, with a Lone Ranger thing, you know. And because I was alone and I was listening to it over and over again, and I was just like letting my mind go, like that's kind of where the ideas came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you got introduced to the comedy world as a whole by way of these videos, did you feel like you had to fight harder to stay in that room?
And alone, you mean?
I just mean in the comedy entertainment sphere. Did you feel like people were putting you in a box of like, well, she's a lip syncer, she's a TikToker, she's a, you know, she writes articles, she writes listicles.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you wanted to say like, I'm just a creative thinker. I'm being foolish. I'm being silly. I'd like to be a comedic performer in a lot of realms.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I was doing those lip syncs, like, I sort of became this different person. And so I think I was having this identity crisis, because I think people wanted to see this very in charge sort of like, you know, clueless boss kind of thing. That's the clueless boss sort of character. And so I didn't know. I was like, who am I really? Like, can I be Trump without being Trump? Mm. You know, I don't know how to do that. And yet I kind of do know how to do that because I worked at Google. You know, like, I've seen a clueless boss over and over again. It took me a while. I think people were like, no, you are a lip syncer. And I was like, you're right. That's all I can do. I don't know what else I can do. So it took a while, and also going through all these, you know, motions of trying to figure out who I am, to be like, no, I there's so much more I want to talk about. There's so much more I want to say. There's so much more I want to do, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so through this, you get introduced to Jerry Seinfeld.
Who?
And it seems like his opinion, and also just being in his world, is very inspirational to you.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah,
I see. This whole thing with Jerry Seinfeld has just been crazy, because I watch Seinfeld. I used to fall asleep to Seinfeld, you know, like, and you know, you watch him back in the 90s with this poofy hair and his like dad jeans, and you're like, he's kind of cute, you know. and he's got this really iconic voice. And then he was one of the first people to share my videos. Like, he was talking about me in the New York Times, and he was like a dad telling his children, this is funny, this is funny. and that that was kind of it. And then, you know, a few years later, I auditioned for this film, and I get the part. And I just never in a million years did I think I would ever do that, you know. And to literally have Jerry Seinfeld in front of you talking to you with the voice being like Sarah is just like it's just an out of body experience at first and the whole time. But he's like, I just admire him so much, you know.
Yeah.
And so I met so many people, you know, and I keep trying to tell myself this, like I met so many people, huge people, people that I admired for years and years and years. And yet for some reason, he was the one that I lost my head with, like completely, like just completely became the most neurotic version of myself.
Yeah.
I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, it also goes back to daddy issues. But I will say that, you know, the thing about Jerry that I loved so much was how rich he is. No, no, I love that he's so chill.
Yeah.
He's just so chill. He's so confident, and he's so relaxed, and he's so like, whatever happens, happens. Mm-hmm. You know, he's that guy. You know, it's like whatever happens, happens. And it's like it's the only way to really have fun is to be like, whatever happens, happens. That's the only way to, if you have to let go of it has to be this, it has to be this, it has to be this. If it's not this, it's going to be a failure. You have to let go of that. And he just seems to have completely let go of that in a way that I just really admire.
Yeah. Also, he has a lot of cars, which I think helps.
Yeah, he does. He does.
Also, I heard he meditates, but whatever.
Yeah.
So when you were, because you were the baby
yeah.
of your family, do you think that it took a long time for your parents to like get you or understand who they thought you were? And now that you're showcasing so many parts of your personality in public, do you think they get you more now?
No, I don't know. I think they, my parents, I love digging into things. I love like exploring things, like really just every like iota of everything. And my parents don't. They just don't. They don't. I got my mom to come to one therapy session. And even after that, she would be like, she'd be like, oh, Sarah, are you still in therapy? And she would make this motion. How's therapy going?
Are you still taking your pills?
So that's what they think of therapy. You know, they think it's for someone who needs help, who has something wrong with them.
I think that's also like in the Jamaican handbook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's this beautiful place where you can really get to the heart of things and really figure it out. And yeah, you do get to a point where you're like, maybe I don't want to talk about this anymore. Maybe I've sort of healed this part of myself and I do want to move on. But I had to go through all that. I needed to go through all that. And they are just like, don't worry, be happy. You know what I mean? Like that's their whole vibe, which is kind of ironic because after years and years of therapy, I am literally like, don't worry, be happy. I think it actually is true. Yeah. Like it's don't worry, be happy.
You
it's
found
true.
It in a roundabout I found it. Way.
I found it, but I had to find it on my own. You know, it's like the Wizard of Oz.
You are exactly the Wizard of Oz.
I am. I really am.
So now what are you excited about?
I don't know. I'm excited to hear what your questions are. I know there's going to be like a million of them.
People are excited. They're already raising their hands a little bit.
I'm excited for people to read the book and I see what resonates with them. I really love this book so much. I mean, one of the things I really love about it is the parts of it, assimilation, determination, and humiliation. And it took me while writing the book to be like, wow, like these are my siblings. Like my brother is assimilation, Navy, married, two kids, house, dog. Like he followed every single thing. And then determination is about my love life. And my sister Charmaine, who was born with Treacher-Collins syndrome, has, you know, always wanted to get married, always. And we are such a visual society. And Trump is the perfect example of that. Like we looked at him and thought, oh, powerful guy. You know, we weren't listening to what he was saying.
Yeah.
It took taking away the visual for us to actually hear what he was saying. And so it sucks that like a lot of times on social media and on dating apps, it almost seems like we're becoming the same version of each other. We all are just saying the same thing, and we want to look the same. And yet my sister, she looks like no one else I've ever met before, and that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I want us to celebrate. I want to be loved for what makes me different, not what makes me the same. And then humiliation, my sister Rachel taught me so much about that, because I realized being embarrassed for me is when I take myself and I put myself in your brain and I tell myself that you're thinking I suck. But if I don't know what you're thinking, I can never be in it. I can't be in your brain. Even if I was in your brain, it'd still be me in your brain. Like, it would still be me looking out of your eyes as me. I can never be you. You know what I mean? So why ever assume that people are looking at you in a certain way? You have no idea what people are thinking. So humiliation is something you can actually only do to yourself. No one can humiliate you. So that taking control of that, because Rachel never does that. She never tries to put herself in anyone else's shoes. She's just Rachel. And so my discovery sort of the fact that, like, who I am is so much based on my siblings. My siblings formed my personality in a way that I didn't see until I sort of wrote this book. And those three pieces, the George, Charmaine, and Rachel, and that's who I wrote this book for, are really, like, they kind of made me, you know, who I am, sort of. And also the fact that, like, It's Seinfeld. It's Seinfeld again, because it's like George is a lot like George and Charmaine is Elaine and Rachel is Kramer. I mean, it's all, and I'm Seinfeld. So, yeah.
I get it. I see the parallels for sure.
The parallels are there. They're there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you learned some really hard truths about yourself by just even going into your Google Docs.
Yeah.
And when you think back about that, like you say in the book, Google Docs knew that you were getting divorced before you did. Mm-hmm. I first interpreted that to mean, like, you stumbled upon a secret and your ex-husband was writing a crazy diatribe, right?
Interesting.
And then when I started to read it, I was like, oh, she's reading her own Google Docs.
Yeah.
She's reading her own notes of just, like, various days of your life. Mm-hmm. And then starting to hear it and realize, like, oh, this is, like, a toxic thing that I was existing in and I was notating parts of it. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that was even you kind of reaching a hand out to your future self to say, hey, like, when you come back and read these, yeah, it should be the last time we write this?
I never thought about it that way. Wow. But I think you might be right. I mean, I thought about it in the fact of, like, you know, a lot of times as a kid when I was in my room journaling, it's because I sort of felt trapped. I felt like I couldn't, there was no one I could really relate to, so I would go to my journal. And then in my marriage, I recreated my childhood. Mm-hmm. I was in the room by myself journaling, yeah, because I couldn't talk to my husband. And it was just easier to write in Google Docs. And then, you know, we had been fired by a few therapists, so that red flag. But
how does that? Because that's never happened to me. I don't want to brag.
Yeah, that's a brag. But that's a brag.
How does that conversation happen? What does that sound like?
Well, the first one was an email.
Because they were really done.
Because they were like, and that was only after like 9 sessions or something. And he just said, I don't think I can help you.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It's worse than the pooper scooper. And the second one, he just, again, but it was a longer time. I think he gave us like 25 or something sessions. And then he was like, yeah, I don't think I can help you. And then my ex-husband tried to give him a bad review on ZocDoc. And ZocDoc wouldn't let him.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, no.
Yeah.
But
because your therapist warned them.
Yeah.
They said he's coming.
So, but even still, I was like, well, relationships are hard.
Yes.
They're hard. Yeah. So, like, that's just part of being hard.
Yeah.
So I went to Google at one point during our marriage and I said, should I get a divorce? And then a quiz popped up. So I took the quiz and the quiz was like, you're with a great man. So stay with him. So I was like, okay.
Saboteur.
Yeah. So in the book, when I finally was like, well, I took the quiz didn't work. I was like, let me look at, you know, my own, what I've written. And so I went to Google Docs and searched Journal Jeff, and it pulled up everything that I'd written about him. And I just wrote the same thing over and over again for like 8 years. And yeah. I was like, it was like the end of a movie. I was just like, whoa, this is proof right here. And I needed that. I needed that proof because I really thought I just needed to work harder. Mm. I thought I just needed to work harder. If I didn't see it right there, like how miserable I was, I don't know if I could have left him.
Yeah. That was really powerful that you did that, especially because you had tried a lot of other tools already.
Exactly.
You know, you're writing about it. You're just firing therapists left and right.
Yeah. We're getting a sunny apartment.
You took him to the clouds.
I took him to the clouds.
You moved him to the clouds.
Yeah, I did everything.
It's very Google of you, you know.
Yeah.
You had tried everything. So I think in earnest.
I literally wrote in my journal, I feel like even if I make a ton of money, he still won't be happy. And I was making a ton of money at that moment, and he still wasn't happy. And I was like, okay, yep, this is it.
Yeah.
Because he was working and I wasn't working and the comedy thing wasn't going that well. Mm. And my mom was like, wait, he's making the bacon and bringing home the bacon. He's doing all the bacon. he's going to leave you. My mom literally said, he's going to leave you because you're doing nothing. And so I was like, I got to make money or else he's going to leave me. Yeah. But I wrote in my journal, even if I make money, I bet he still won't be happy.
Yeah. And I mean, at that point in your life, the work that you would have had to done to try to even like compete with him would have put you down a whole nother path.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I can speak from my personal experience. I have dated people who are more successful than me and less successful than me, especially in entertainment, and it's the same issues. You know, it doesn't matter how much power they have, how much money they have. If they have some type of insecurity or issues that they haven't worked out, they're going to push that off on you no matter what. They'll do it to you, they'll do it to anybody.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing is that I felt like he was very competitive with me. And then it took me a while to realize I'm a competitive person, too. My competition just comes out in different ways. But I don't want to be with someone who I feel like I'm in competition with.
Yeah, in an unhealthy way.
Is there a healthy way to be in competition?
Absolutely. I think spouses can have healthy competition. What do you guys think? just an is a no, for sure. I do think it's possible if you can motivate each other and keep each other accountable through certain goals, plan for things together. I think you can be competitive in that way, but it shouldn't be.
I bet the Obamas are competitive with each other.
You know?
Yeah, I bet you're right.
You know?
Yeah.
I bet they are.
I bet they are.
I bet Michelle wins, but I bet.
Not at basketball.
Not at basketball, yeah. Not anymore, no. So now do you feel like you have a different outlook on love?
Yeah. Not a good one. I got pretty cynical, I'll be honest. I've been pretty cynical lately about love, but I think my ideal relationship is you know, a 68-year-old comedian. No, just kidding.
lots of cars. If you know anyone.
No, but I love my life so much. I really love being single. I really do. I love being on my own. But you know, it would be nice to be with someone else who also loves being on their own. Mm-hmm. You know, I just love like two very independent people who are sometimes together, and then they're together. And you know what I mean? Like that's kind of my ideal thing right now. And maybe I'll find it, and maybe I'll just have a bunch of friends, and that would be great too. You know.
Either way.
Yeah.
Either way. I love that you have peace with either. That sounds healthy.
I have so much peace.
So much peace.
So much peace.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. Foolish is an incredible book. I encourage you all to read it if you haven't. Finish it. Read it. Sarah Cooper is your best friend in your pocket. She's giving it to you. She's giving it to you.
Chanel, this has been so great. Thank you so much for doing this.
Of course. Oh my God, it was such a pleasure to read this. I was on the train on the way here today and I laughed out loud while reading the book. And this lady next to me was like, I love it when a good book makes me laugh. And it pissed me off. It pissed me off. I really felt like she was reaching. But also, she caught me in a moment that was so genuine. So, yeah, thank you so much for sharing yourself with us. It's really, and we're really proud of you. I'm speaking on behalf of everybody and your parents. We're really proud of you.
Mom, Dad, thank you.
I texted them earlier. We're going to take some questions now. I'm sure you guys have lots of questions for Sarah Cooper. We have a few minutes here at the end just set out so that you guys can chat.
Hi.
Hi.
Your sister's name is Rachel, and I didn't know that. But I felt like you were speaking to me, so I claim it.
Your name is Rachel?
You're Rachel?
It is.
Hey, Rachel.
So as a
that
person,
was so funny if her name wasn't Rachel.
I know, right?
So as a person who often felt like showing up in spaces where, you know, you're sort of this veneer, what advice would you have for just claiming in that bravery and being authentic to yourself and not asking for permission anymore?
Yeah, I noticed that the journaling really has helped me figure out exactly like who I am, what I want, what I think about things. Because if you don't even know what you think, it's hard to open up. It's hard to say that, you know? So I feel like knowing is the first part, knowing exactly how you feel and what you think. I've even gotten to the point where sometimes I'll just be having conversations with people and I'll think to myself, what would I journal about this moment? And that'll help me realize, okay, how do I really feel about it? And then it's just taking those little moments. Each of us have a moment all probably, I don't know. I have a ton of moments all day where I'm like, I want to say this. Should I say it? Should I do that? I don't know. Every time you want to do something and you shut yourself down, it compounds. Then you just want to keep shutting yourself down. So it's like, it's taking that little like, oh, I actually don't like the fish. I'm gonna tell them that I don't want fish. You know what I mean? Do it. Say it. Like those little tiny things that you want, give yourself permission to actually voice those things. And then it'll get easier and easier to like ask for the bigger things. Although, you know, I couldn't ask for the linen closet. It was easier for me to ask for the divorce than to ask for my linen closet back. But once I asked for the divorce, and I will say that it was the most powerful moment in my life, but also like the voice that came out was just like so weak and so small, but it was the most powerful thing that I've ever done. So like, it's okay if like your voice is weak at first, you know, and that's okay. It'll get stronger the more you use it. So it's really just practicing it in those small moments as much as you can. Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Rachel.
Yeah, Rachel. Clap it up for Rachel. Who is it? Yeah, right here in the front. Wireless mics. Hi.
So I'm also named Sarah. I really don't like spicy food.
Sarah does. I don't think there's a single Sarah.
I tried to explain to a friend. I was like, I'm a super taster. And she was like, that is the whitest thing I've ever heard. But so my question is, like, do you think that hitting 40 gave you any of that, like, feeling of, like, whatever happens, happens? Because I feel like for me, hitting 40 was like, oh, I didn't do all the things I was supposed to do, but, like, it's too late to do them now, so I can just do whatever. Like, did you feel that at all?
Well, I personally feel like I'm 10 years behind in so many ways. Like, I'm 45 now, which I still can't believe, and none of you can believe it either.
Shocking
to everyone. You know, I think now I'm starting to get there. Like, now I'm starting to get there. Before, I think I thought I was like that, but I was still doing everything by the book. I was still following a script. Yeah, but what your 40s are, things do get real. You know, your parents start to get older. You know, it's the light is coming. You know, like it's getting darker. It does give you a burst of confidence to take more chances, knowing that you can kind of see that like the chances are much more precious. So yeah, I totally see that. Yeah.
Shout out to all the 40-year-olds in the building. Hey.
So as a therapist.
Oh, no, she's going to fire you. Oh, no, she came here to fire you. This is all a setup.
I've never been fired by an individual therapist.
Ooh, talk,
only
talk
a couple
it.
Therapists.
Okay, that's a new credit.
I'm not here to fire anybody.
Okay, thank God.
But I am a therapist. So my question to you is, are you going to have another show?
Another show?
Yeah, because you really got me through the pandemic.
Yeah, I want to. I think that like I said, like I'm just now figuring out like what I really like, what makes me laugh, what I laugh out loud at. And so now I feel like I'm in a better position to make something that I would actually enjoy, that I would actually watch, that I would love to like do for a really long time. And so hopefully I'll get that opportunity. And if people like you and you and you all keep supporting me and as much as you have, which I want to thank you so much, because literally without you sharing my videos and talking about me and being here, you know, like all of this has helped me live this life that I'm just so in love with now. So I'm hoping very much to have a show. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank I know you can't tell us, but are any of your patients TV executives or?
Yeah. Okay, that's what you need to do. Anytime an executive comes in and asks you, you know, what they should do with their life, say, give Sarah Cooper a show, you know, like that, prescribe it to them. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that clears HIPAA. I think that's like pretty even keel.
Yeah.
What do you think, Sarah, about Trump having a gag order placed against him? And while you were kind of mocking him, which we loved, have you gotten any calls from the Proud Boys or anything like that?
Oh, no. No.
Good.
I so many people are like, are you okay? Like, did someone come after you? Like, anything? Like, no. Actually, the people who like Trump also like my videos.
Yeah.
Sadly, I don't think they knew I was making fun of him. I genuinely
It's a
don't.
Percentage, definitely. What do you think, 60-40?
No.
Yeah.
So I think he might have even enjoyed the videos, to be honest. He was probably watching him like, oh, I think this girl likes me.
He's like, yeah. This girl Sarah's spicy. Yeah. Something about her.
Jamaican women love me, you know. But yeah, I mean, he's just so, I say that I just think he's so boring now because I just think he keeps repeating himself. I mean, like, literally, how much can he talk about water pressure? And I just don't, like, it's just old at this point. So yeah, I've kind of moved on from it. But I literally think I can lip sync any dude, so.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Hola,
Sarah.
Hi.
You got me through the pandemic as well as many other people here.
Thank
but
you.
My question is, so you spoke very candidly about your family and about your siblings, right? So was there any backlash about the things that you were open and honest about in the book when it came to honest stories about the family?
There's a few things that my parents didn't want to talk about. And I was like, why did I even listen to them? They're not going to read the book anyway. I could have written whatever I wanted, but I feel like my parents are one of the last people that experienced the American dream. They came here in 1980 with four kids, two with disabilities, and my dad was making, I don't know, like $18,000 a year. My mom didn't have a job, and they are retired and they are completely fine, and like all of us have owned real estate at this point, you know? Like, so they were able to do it, but in Jamaica, they only had one pair of shoes, each of them. My dad lived in a very, very poor rural area of Jamaica with his grandmother, and that was it. It was a shack. And so to come from that to where they are is amazing, but they didn't want to talk about that. They actually, I don't know if there's shame there or what it is, but they really didn't want me to talk about where they came from in a way that, like, I wanted to. So there was that. But the other thing that I have to say is that, you know, when I was born, my sister Charmaine told me this, and I had never heard, no one in my family had heard this story before, which is that when I came back from the hospital, she looked at my ears to see if my ears looked like hers, because she didn't have ears, because that's when you're born with Treacher-Collins syndrome, you don't have ears. And so she was desperate to have my ears look like her ears. And when they didn't, she was a little disappointed. And that really hit me how important it is to see yourself in the world. And I'd never thought about that before. And it's just such an interesting moment, probably, for my mother hoping and praying that I was born healthy, and my sister hoping and praying that I was born like her. You know, it's just, so there are things like that I didn't put in the book, because those are two stories that both of them didn't want in the book. So I didn't put them in the book, but I'm telling you now, and this is being live streamed. So
I think it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
That was a great question. I do think it's really hard to share your truth in a book, and also share it with people that are a part of your truth, and hope that they understand what you're sharing and the reflections that we've made.
Yeah, plus I also think, you know, my previous books were illustrated. This is the first book that I'm writing where it's essays, and it's hard to write the thing in the way that you want to, that it will be interpreted in sort of the right way. And so there were topics that I shied away from just because I felt like I didn't have the skill yet to write about them yet, and hopefully I will one day, you know.
And what about your ex-husband? Did he care about
this? The wildest thing, he asked to see the manuscript, and I emailed it to him, and I haven't heard from him since.
He got fired from Google, so he doesn't he doesn't even have access to that email anymore. A question in the middle here. We have some.
Hey there. You guys have been great. This has been very fun.
Thank you so much.
To sort of lighten it up, I'm wondering when you do the lip sync videos, like what's the process? How long does that take? You see so many people do videos and the lip sync's all off. Does it take forever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the first one I did, I took a few hours, and then by the end I was spending like 12 hours on them. Like I was really being a perfectionist with them. So it was really just listening to it over and over and over and over and over again. And I got a kick out of trying to get it perfect as perfectly as possible. I did get a kick out of that. Yeah.
I really enjoyed when you would share a draft of another one.
Yeah.
And you could see the subtleties and the differences, yeah. like different decisions you made,
yeah.
different emotions that you evoked. Like, just really, you could see your acting, really.
Yeah.
You know, so I do want to say that it was more than just lip syncing. I hope you're not just telling yourself, I just lip synced a little bit. You know, because we've all seen lots of lip syncs, right?
Yeah.
And there's a difference when someone is committing to every single emotion that the original person is feeling, and they're showing it on their face and in their actions and in their body and in their surroundings in their situation. You know, it takes on an art of its own.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I kind of felt like it was really fun to make him look as dumb as I thought
yeah.
he sounded.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that was fun.
We're really thankful for
yeah.
it. We're thankful for it because without those lip syncs, we would only have the real thing.
Right.
And that's really hard for us. Any other questions for Sarah Cooper, the lip sync queen?
One right here.
This is less of a question and more of an encouragement. Not that you're looking for it, but I was watching you a couple weeks ago, I think before your bangs, and I think it was on Instagram before you went to YouTube.
Yeah.
But you got really choked up, and I was like, oh my gosh, I feel so bad for her. And you were talking about meeting guys online and that sort of thing. So I thought, I have to tell her about Lynn and me, and this is Lynn. And we met on Match.com in 2015 and got married 3 years ago. We're going to have our third anniversary at the end of the month. And sorry. So I just wanted to say, like, you know, well, you can find a good guy.
Yeah.
So, but they're out there. You know.
Oh, thank you.
So I just felt horrible watching you.
Oh, well, I'm sorry I made you feel horrible.
No.
Feel horrible.
No, I mean, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's like I was like, you know, it can be better. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I thank you for your question. I'm so happy that you guys. Actually, Match.com actually worked for you.
Yeah.
I was on Match.com for so long, and it just drove me crazy. So I'm excited that it worked for you all, and you all seem so happy. And you're here, so that's great. I think it's okay to be alone, too, you know? I think being alone is actually sometimes... I mean, I think I went through a period where I was just like, I really want to be alone, just to find myself a little bit more. And now I'm starting to open up a little bit more to being around people and being with people. But alone time, I find it very precious. So I actually, alone is good for me sometimes. Yeah, but thank you for your encouragement.
Thank you guys so much for your questions. We're going to give Sarah a final moment to give us our last parting. We can clap in a second. Just hold on. Just hold on. Thank you so much again for writing this and sharing so many parts of yourself with us. It's really beautiful and dope, and I'm going to say the N-word with you later just to celebrate. Okay, I'm going to say it for you.
Thank you.
And we're going to
celebrate. How about you say it and I lip sync it?
That's right. Now, that's an idea. Do you have any final words about Foolish?
I'm good. I just want to thank each and every one of you for coming. This has just been so amazing. It's so wonderful to see all your faces and to meet you in person. And I want to thank you again for all of your support over the past 3 years or 5 years or however long you've known me and supported me. You might think you're just hanging out online, watching a video and sharing it, but you might actually be supporting someone's dreams and sharing and changing their life. So I want to thank you for that. So thank you so much.
On behalf of Sarah Cooper, we encourage you all to get foolish tonight. You know what that means. Get home safe. Have a good night. Thank you so much for coming. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.